What's up, NBA fans? Welcome to another episode of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. How you doing, Corey?
Pretty good, Nick. We got a little bit more to talk about today, so it's a fun day.
Yeah, we got some big contracts out there since last time we chatted. Before we get started, just a quick reminder, you can check out all the OTG pods on Blog Talk Radio. You can check out NBA Outlet on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and OTGBasketball.com. But let's get started with the offer sheets. You know, last time we spoke, these guys didn't even sign an offer sheet yet, but this is all happening in a couple days. Zach LaVine got an offer sheet of 4 years, $80 million from the Sacramento Kings, and then Chicago decided to match. Was this the right move by the Bulls?
Yeah, I think it was. We had just mentioned before. It's funny because the curse of the NBA outlet. We talked about a player, and then right after we got off, like an hour later, he signed an offer sheet. I would have liked to fit in Sacramento for Zach LaVine, but I think Chicago had to match. You know, he was a big part of that Jimmy Butler trade. He really didn't get his legs underneath him last season after having knee surgery. So it was kind of hard to gauge. You know, he had a minutes restriction too when he first came back. So it was kind of hard to gauge Zach LaVine last year in his short period of time with the Chicago Bulls. So I think the Bulls had to take the risk and just to see, you know, what he can turn into over these next 4 years. So I think it was the right move for the Bulls.
I feel like this is a situation where the Bulls kind of shot themselves in the foot because they probably could have got away offering him a smaller deal if they sent it out themselves, but instead they waited till somebody on the market sent him a deal. And I don't think it's horrendous, but I definitely think it's probably an overpay. Obviously, Zach LaVine's still coming off the torn ACL. He can develop a little bit more, but there has been a lot of question about his defense and his playmaking, but the potential is there. No, he does have the potential to be probably a borderline all-star. Can he get to that level? That's yet to be determined. Will he get to that level? We don't know. But I think, you know, the Bulls kind of put themselves in a weird position because they didn't send an offer out. And then you knew the Kings were going to kind of make a big offer. And it's like, do they want to lose him for nothing? Because I feel like either way, the Bulls were going to get some negativity. You know, if they match the deal, they're going to be like, all right, Zach LaVine's a little overpaid. They didn't match the deal. They're like, all right, you just traded for this guy and now you don't keep him.
Right. And then also, I mean, the last thing we heard from Chicago Bulls, you know, rumor mill on Zach LaVine is that the front office was kind of wavering on their thoughts about him. So then you hear that and there's no offer sheet. So then, you know, Chicago put themselves in a spot where they kind of opened the door for the Kings to kind of offer this kind of big contract because the Kings probably thought, well, the Bulls, there's rumors that the Bulls front office doesn't really, you know, they're not high on Zach LaVine. They haven't offered him anything yet. So this might be a time for us to swoop in. So yeah, you're right. The Chicago Bulls definitely kind of shot themselves in the foot in this situation.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, Zach LaVine could possibly live up to the contract. He will need to improve a lot, but he seems like a kid that wants to work hard. He wants to get better. You know, we'll see what happens in the next couple seasons. I would say also the Bulls aren't in a situation where they like really need their cap. Like, I think they're okay rebuilding for another year or two, you know, maybe a couple years down the line, they might look at this contract and be like, oh shit. But for right now, I think they're okay with it.
Yeah, for sure. And he's not even near his peak. You know, he's still a very young guy.
Exactly. And if he, you know, he's working hard, he kind of sets the right culture in Chicago. We'll see what happens. But another offer sheet, it was funny. We didn't see any big signings or any free agency like that. And then Kyle Anderson got an offer sheet from the Memphis Grizzlies, 4 years, $37 million. And reports say that the Spurs will not match. Is this the right choice for the Spurs not to match his contract?
It's tough to say. I think if Kawhi ends up being traded or not playing for the Spurs, I think Kyle Anderson, you know, kind of backing up Rudy Gay, who's, you know, it wouldn't be a terrible fit, you know, for the Spurs. Kyle Anderson's been there, you know, forever, it feels like. But at the same time, you know, 4 years, $37 million for Kyle Anderson, it to me was still a little bit high money. I don't know why Memphis loves to overpay small forwards a little bit. But I think it was the right move by the Spurs because also it gives them a little bit more cap flexibility going forward.
Yeah, I think the Spurs would have liked to keep him, but at this price, they're okay losing him because I think Kyle Anderson's more of a borderline starter. You know, I think the one thing that hurts his game is he's not a three-point shooter. And he is a good defender. He is a good playmaker. But the fact that he doesn't shoot threes and at that position in the NBA nowadays, it's tough to have a forward or a wing out there that doesn't shoot threes. So I think it's the right move for the Spurs. It's almost an interesting decision by the Grizzlies because they're not really known for spacing or shooting a lot of threes. So it kind of fits their grit and grind. Were you surprised the Grizzlies were the team that made the offer to him?
No, it's funny, actually. When I saw it, I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense for all the reasons you mentioned. You know, he plays defense. He can get to the rim. He can play make a little bit. Obviously, the jump shot, the three-point shot isn't there, but he kind of fits in with what Memphis is all about. And it just, to me, it was another notion of this Memphis team really trying to win 50 games.
Yeah, it definitely, like, they don't want to rebuild. I believe their pick is protected 1-8 next year. It's going to Boston if, you know, it falls out of that number. So it could kind of benefit them where they don't lose a high pick, because I think after a few years it loses protection. But they definitely are trying to win right now. It's tough, you know, especially in the West. It's tough to really see this team. And if it's kind of almost the same similar situation to last year. Like, if Marcus Gasol or Mike Conley get hurt again, they're going to be in a bad situation.
And also, you know, it's not a terrible unmovable contract. You know, maybe Kyle Anderson gets moved in the future, because it's like almost, what, $8.7 million a year or something like that. It's just under 10. So it's not like a terrible deal to be possibly moved. Maybe someone will be interested near the deadline, or if the Grizzlies stumble out the gate and they, you know, get nowhere near 50 wins, possibly he gets moved.
Yeah, I think the one thing for him, if he could add a three-point shot, the contract doesn't look as bad. But obviously he hasn't done that yet, because he does play solid D and he is a little bit of a playmaker and he has some nice moves. But like I said, three-point shots, very important in the NBA nowadays. Moving on to the extension we saw, this was a big money deal. 5 years, $158 million for Devin Booker and the Suns. Thoughts on this? You know, the Suns really had no choice, but did you think this was the right amount?
I mean, it's a lot of money, but I mean, we've seen, you know, 70 points. I mean, even though it was like a fraud 70 points, but you know, we've seen the offensive potential from Devin Booker. The defense is, you know, yet to be truly seen, but the team is so bad, you can't really doubt, you know, blame him for the kind of defense he plays. But I think it's the right call. Devin Booker is still, what, 22 years old, 21 years old. He's still very young. You got him locked up for the next 5 years. You got some nice pieces around him now in Phoenix. So I think it's the right move. You got to keep your star, and hopefully you can build around him to then have a, you know, a winning, successful future.
Yeah, I think the fact that he's 21 years old, you know, he's going to get better. He still has a lot to improve, not only from a defensive standpoint and like his skill set, improve as a playmaker, but physically. You know, at 21, you're still putting on a lot of muscle. He's still growing a little bit, so I think he can add some nice size. And for the Suns franchise, I think it's pretty big. You know, Devin Booker projects to be an all-star player. Now you have an all-star player locked up for 4 to 5 years. We talked about it a lot. They've been trying to get an all-star. They've been trying to get a big name. Now they have one. They developed him themselves, and it looks good for the franchise. You know, it's a really positive sign. You know, maybe it's a hair too much, but I don't think it really matters for the impact it's going to have overall.
Yeah, I think looking back, we'll say this is probably a really good deal.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, they weren't going to lose Devin Booker. They needed him to stay there. You know, they're going to give him the money that he wants. What would you say is a ceiling for Devin Booker? Do you think he could be a superstar, or is he going to project the best as a top five shooting guard, all-star type player?
I mean, you know, this might be a bad comparison. I don't know if people will jump on me, but, like, you know, something to like a Ray Allen. You know, I don't know. I think offensively he could be possibly a better version of Ray Allen scoring-wise, because he can drive, he can shoot. I think he can be an all-star. I don't know if he can be a superstar, but I think for sure he can be an all-star.
Yeah, I think all-star, like you said, for sure is definitely something we'll see. You know, I think the superstar thing is going to have to come as he's going to have to improve as a playmaker, which he did last season, you know, take another step doing that. And then also defensively, like I mentioned, kind of improve in that area. If he can add to his all-around game, and like I said, only 21 years old, the sky's really the limit. He can improve a lot in a lot of different areas. I think superstar potential is there, but all-star feels like a lock.
And I think we'll know more about the superstar potential when we see the Suns kind of take that step into being a more formidable matchup against other better teams. You know, if they start, you know, winning games and playing competitively and Devin Booker is in the forefront and leading the way, then I think, you know, we'll be able to gauge more on if he can be a superstar.
Exactly. If he gets better teammates, like they tried to add this year, some, you know, nice young rookies, and then obviously Trevor Ariza. I think when a player has a better roster, if he can get better, and if he doesn't get worse, his numbers don't get worse, and he gets more efficient, I think that says a lot about him. So like you said, you know, time will tell. Re-signings. Joseph, this has actually happened right after we signed off on the other podcast as well. Joseph Nurkic re-signed with the Portland Trailblazers, 4 years, $48
million. Yeah, you know, it was a little... I mean, it's not surprising. I think if you're the Blazers, you had to bring him back. You know, it's not a crazy a lot of money. He's shown some potential. Obviously, last year was up and down, but I think it was the right move. You couldn't afford to lose him, especially when you're this cap struck.
Yeah, I think that's the thing right there. And at the price, I don't think it's terrible. And maybe it's not more than they want to play, because I believe I saw a tweet that said Mason Plumlee is making more than Joseph Nurkic right now. And as well, they got the first round pick with Zach Collins. So I think it really worked out for Portland in the situation. 4 years, $12 million. They couldn't lose him, because if they did, they probably wouldn't get better. They're not going to get better with Nurkic, but at least they'll at least stay the same. and it gives him a center. A starting center at $12 million a year, I don't think is a bad number. You know, you
could last year, they were the three seed.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, obviously he has his flaws. He was exposed in the playoffs, but during the regular season, he did his role. And if he can just get more consistent and add to his game a little bit, I think the deal will be fine. And similar to the Kyle Anderson thing, you know, 2 years down the line, if you're trying to look for a movable contract that's not terrible to move, I think Nurkic would be okay.
Yeah, especially because, you know, like we mentioned, he's also still young. What is he, 24, 25?
Yeah.
So there is potential for him still to grow as a player.
Yeah, I think if he worked on it, you know, got better as a passer, as a shooter a little bit, just added a few more moves. And defensively, he needs to kind of establish himself. Obviously, there's some limitations with his athleticism, but, you know, it's not.
Staying out of foul trouble. He gets in a lot of foul trouble. Dumb fouls.
And that's what happens when you're a little bit slower than the guy you're guarding. You're going to kind of swipe at him a bit. So we'll see what happens with Nurkic. But like I said, not a bad deal at all. I think Portland can't be upset about it. Another re-signing, Davis Bertans re-signed with the Spurs today. 4 years, $20 million. I think this is a solid deal. Nice three-point shooter, comes off the bench, high basketball IQ guy. This is a guy I was hoping the Nets might swing at, but solid move for the Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of see where they wanted to go after losing Kyle Anderson. You know, Bertans being at 4 years, $20 million. If that was what Kyle Anderson got or was looking for, they would have jumped all over that. Bertans has shown potential. Like you said, he can hit the long ball. He fits. You know, the Spurs have been trying to add, I feel like, three-point shooting this entire offseason. So I like this move.
Yeah, it's not a bad deal at all. $5 million, I don't think will – he's still relatively young as well. Now moving on to some of the new signings. Brook Lopez signed with the Milwaukee Bucks, 1 year, $3.4 million. Thought this was a really nice move for the Bucks. You know, they got him for a bargain, add some nice spacing at the center position, some nice scoring. I think it was a move I didn't expect.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Yesterday I was putting up the Evan Dial post, the five bargain free agents, and Brook Lopez was number two on that list. And one of his suggested teams was the Milwaukee Bucks. And obviously, I think the Lopez signing happened, I think, an hour or two before it was up. But I was like, yeah, that's spot on. It actually makes sense when you think about it on paper. Brook Lopez can actually possibly be the best offensive center on that roster. Maybe not the best defensive center, but I think he really gives them more versatility offensively. You know, he may not play giant minutes, but for 20, 25 minutes a game, Brook Lopez, along with Thon Maker, could be a really nice, you know, back and forth pairing.
Yeah, and they'll probably look to move maybe John Henson or, you know, give him less minutes. But I like the fit for Brook because now it's going to open up the paint a lot more for Giannis. You know, having Brook able to shoot threes now, and it gives Giannis a nice pick and roll partner too. So I think Brook will give him some nice scoring. And they also can kind of give Giannis a break once in a while because Brook can still work in the post and get you a few buckets when necessary if he has a nice matchup.
Yeah, I think his signing personally, when I saw this signing, I immediately thought the Bucks have a great chance now. I mean, they already had a good chance, but now I think they have a great chance to be a home court team in the East.
Yeah, and in Bud's system, he usually does like having big shoot threes, so it's another nice fit. They added Ersan Ilyasova, you know, a couple nice shooting bigs for them. I think it'll open up spacing, which was a big issue last year.
Right, 100%.
When you watch them play Boston, it felt like Boston was almost dropping four or five guys in the paint at times, and they were just making Giannis's life miserable. And now they have some spacing at the big position. I think it's going to help him a lot.
Yeah, the spacing was a huge part to me of why this signing was a plus. We mentioned in the past how the three-point shooting for the Bucks was kind of sketchy and it wasn't very good, and Brook Lopez can definitely help with that front-court three-point shooting.
Another center sign, Zaza Pachulia signed with the Detroit Pistons, 1 year, $2.4 million. You know, nothing, not a big move, but I think it kind of helps set that locker room a little bit. You know, just a nice veteran to have around.
Yeah, I mean, the Pistons just want me to hate them more, I guess. you know, it's a solid move. He kind of fits that. I mean, the Pistons aren't the bad boy Pistons from the 90s. But he fits that, you know, the kind of mantra the Pistons generally have of being tough and rigid. You know, the comment Zaza made to Russell Westbrook, too, after this signing was comical.
What'd he say? I didn't see it.
Oh, he said something. I guess Westbrook said something about, like, good that, you know, Zaza's out of the West. And Zaza was like, I'm still going to see you twice a year. Don't worry.
Wow. Okay, Zaza, you're
real. Yeah. But, you know, I think it's a solid move for the Pistons. You know, he's a veteran. He's an NBA champion. So, you know, maybe he can help push that Pistons team a little bit over the hump. But, I mean, he's not going to do a great deal because, obviously, Andre Drummond is the front man.
Yeah, I think maybe some backup minutes at center once in a while. I wouldn't be surprised if he really didn't play at all and he just was kind of there as a veteran just to be in the locker room. But talking about Golden State-related stuff, Jonas Jerebko was waived by the Utah Jazz this weekend, and now the Warriors look like they're going to be able to pick him up when he clears waivers. Talk about just another blessing for the Warriors.
Yeah, I just, you know, the hits just keep on coming. It's a good move for the Warriors. It kind of reminds me of when they got Amir Caspi. You know, it's a stretch big. He plays the power forward. He can shoot the three. His defense isn't great, but he can do some things offensively. It's just another nice addition for that bench unit in case anything seriously happens.
Yeah, it's just a nice bench piece. You know, like you said, he can shoot the ball a little bit. He has a nice offensive game. He also is a hustle player. You know, he plays with good energy, can kind of get into you. He can get a little bit tough, a little bit dirty sometimes, and I think it'll be perfect for the Warriors. It was kind of amazing that it happened so fast. Like, you would think to yourself, like, why would another team try to swoop in there? It looked like he was just looking to win, and why not for Jerebko?
Yeah, for sure. It's the Warrior strike again, right? If any guy hits the waiver wire and he has some kind of 3-point shot, it feels like he's destined to be a Warrior.
Yeah, and if you haven't won yet, like, you know, I guess it makes sense for the player, especially like you're not going to get big money in this offseason, so why not go with the best team?
Yeah, and you're still going to make probably similar money than you already were making, but now you have a chance to win.
Yeah, exactly. Now we got to talk about a blockbuster trade, just big pieces moved everywhere. The Orlando Magic acquired Jerian Grant and Timothy Mozgov in a 3-team deal with the Charlotte Hornets and Chicago Bulls. The Hornets picked up Bismack Biyombo, and the Bulls picked up a non-guaranteed contract to open up some cap space. So obviously this is the trade everybody was waiting for. Thoughts on this one?
Well, I didn't find out about this monumental blockbuster trade till earlier today when you showed me this trade happening, because my phone being from 1973 is striking and causing issues. But surprising, you know, the Orlando Magic getting Jerian Grant, I think it's a solid move because obviously Shelvin Mack was their point guard last year. So they get a young point guard. They can take a flyer on him. Getting Timothy Mozgov is comical. And then the Hornets getting Bismack Biyombo, where he started his career in 2011, is also, you know, rather funny. But, you know, the Hornets needed a center, obviously, after moving Dwight Howard. And I don't hate Bismack Biyombo as a center.
He's better than Mozgov.
Yeah. I mean, at $17 million, Biyombo is terrible because of that money. But, I mean, Biyombo's game isn't terrible because he can play defense. He can rebound. We've seen that when he was with the Toronto Raptors. Obviously, he didn't play a great deal in Orlando. It wasn't as successful in Orlando. But, you know, he can give you, you know, he can give you some points around the rim. He can block shots. He can rebound. So I don't hate it for the Hornets, who are in this, you know, weird transitional period.
Yeah, it's better than having Mozgov, who you weren't going to play. Bismack, who has had some success in Charlotte, like you said, brings the defense, brings the rebounding. You know, he can catch a oop once in a while. His hands are kind of questionable. Offensive game's not really there, but you're paying a little bit more money, but you're getting a player that actually can contribute, unlike Timothy Mozgov, who's probably just going to sit the bench in Orlando and not really do much. Jerian Grant, like you said, I thought that was a nice move. Pick up a young point guard, see if it can work out. If you can't throw lobs to Bamba and Isaac, then you're probably not that great of a point guard anyways, and then they could always add a veteran too. And then for the Bulls, this kind of signals that they might try to make another move. They opened up about $4.2 million in cap space with this move, so they might have something up their sleeve.
Yeah, I think this move is them trying to go after Nwamba. You know, there's been a lot of reports about Nwamba having some interest, or, you know, having a lot of interest around the league in Chicago, wanting to bring him back but not being able to, possibly because of the money issue. And this does free up a little bit more money to throw his way, because I don't think he's going to get much more than, you know, $4.3 million to begin with. So I like that move. And like you said, with the Jerian Grant going to Orlando, I think this also kind of shows that maybe Isaiah Thomas and the Orlando rumors are probably dead.
Yeah, they mentioned there was some chatter this weekend saying that it looked like the two sides couldn't come to an agreement on a price, but Isaiah Thomas doesn't have many teams to choose from, so we'll see what happens. And there's still a possibility they could sign him. You know, they could go with three guards or whatever, because they don't really have many point guards on the roster at all. But that's pretty much in terms of actual moves. There's been a few rumors. You know, we mentioned Melo a little bit on the last show. Now it looks like Philly is a potential landing spot for Carmelo. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I saw that before the pod. A little bit interesting. You know, there's always a dark horse, I guess, when you're going after, you know, in any of these races. If I was Philly, I would be slightly reluctant to bring in Melo. I don't know if I'd want Melo necessarily in that locker room with that team. I don't know. I feel like Melo could kind of disrupt that locker room. I feel like he would think he is the second offensive option on that team, which would be extremely scary. But, you know, for Melo, if he was to go to that team, he would at least be in the playoffs again, and he'd be competing for a spot in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are scared of the move and they don't like it, but if you really think about it, it might make sense. You know, they don't really have a go-to scorer other than Embiid. Like, Melo gives them a guy that can go get them buckets sometimes, and he comes a little bit more into his role. You know, like, obviously, OKC had a lot of great players, but Philly has more great players, too. They have Ben Simmons, they have Joel Embiid, they have J.J. Redick. There's a lot. It's just a really nice winning situation. I think they're a little bit more offensive-minded in Philly, too. So I think it could work out, depending on Melo's attitude, like you said. But having some good leaders in there, like J.J. Redick's been known around the league to be a nice guy to have in the locker room. Amir Johnson re-signed. Like, you know, I don't think they'd bring him on without him kind of having a better idea what to expect. And he could potentially start on that team. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities, but I think for Melo, it's just a lot. What are you going to do defensively? I think if I was Melo this offseason, I think I mentioned this before, I would just really hit the gym and try to condition myself to be quicker, because I think that's the one area where he just needs to be a little bit quicker on the floor defensively so he can switch once in a while. But then having Embiid to protect you in the back and then having Robert Covington on the wings could definitely help him too.
Yeah, I mean, the first point you made about the fact that, like, Melo is one of those scorers that, you know, there's not a ton of guys on Philly that can create their own shot and go get their own shot and get a bucket. And Melo would be one of those guys who, you know, you give him the ball and you just say, you know, try and give us a bucket. So for that instance, I think it would be good. But, you know, him starting to me still, it would be so questionable. But again, you know, maybe you put him at the four. You can't put him at the three. But
yeah, I think you put him at the four.
Yeah, you start, you know, I don't know. What would the starting five be with Melo, though?
Do you technically, like, you start Ben Simmons, I guess, at the one, J.J. Redick, Robert Covington, Carmelo, and then Joel Embiid.
And Fultz would be your sixth man?
Yeah, Fultz. And depending on what Fultz does, like, I wouldn't be super confident in him going to the season being the starter, but you never know. It depends on what Philly's thinking. I think Ben Simmons just gives you so much versatility defensively where he can literally guard one through four. Like, it's not really a problem for him to have to guard other positions. Covington had to defend a lot of smaller guys last year, where you could kind of hide Melo on whoever is probably the weakest offensive player on the other team. But like I said, he still would need to improve. I mean, if they could convince him to be the sixth man, that'd be really nice too, because then Embiid could get some nice rest, and then you'd have somebody coming off the bench who could essentially work in the post, get you some easy baskets here and there.
I truly believe this, and this could be a hot take, but I believe if Melo was on a contending team or a team that has a threat to contend and was a sixth man, he would be, in my mind, and have an opportunity of being top five and sixth man of the year votes.
Yeah, I mean, if he, like, bought into the role, he could probably be top five, like you said, and have a real chance to win it. I think Philly is intriguing because it gives Melo a realistic shot at going to the finals. Like. Right. He could go to the other teams, but realistically, like, he could go to the Lakers and play with LeBron. Are they going to beat Golden State? No. Are they going to beat Houston? I doubt it. So that's already cutting that off. If he goes to Houston, I mean, you could kind of convince yourself that maybe they could beat Golden State, but still would be tough. If you're going on Philly, you have to beat Boston, who could deal with some injuries like they did last year, and then you have a real chance because Embiid, I think, is going to get better. Ben Simmons is going to get better. Fultz is going to get better. Covington could probably get a little bit better too, so... It's a real option for Melo. Does he want to get out of the West, go back to the East? And not to mention, Philly's close to New York, which was a big deal for Melo when he was leaving New York the first time. He wanted to be close to home. He ended up in OKC, but Philly's right there. That's a train ride.
That's true. That's a good point.
So I would definitely consider that in my thought process with looking at Melo would go, because family is important to him. And winning a championship, which he's never been to the finals, so getting to that opportunity would be big too.
He hasn't even been to the conference finals, I believe, since like his second year in the league with Denver.
Yeah, he hasn't. So that would be big. And I think it'd be a good opportunity. It would just be like the attitude thing. Another thing on the rumor mill today, it looks like the Cavs are looking to trade Kyle Korver. His contract's around $7 million and change. It's $7 million and change next year, but only 3.5 guaranteed. Thoughts on Korver? Where are some landing spots you could see him end up in?
Three spots that just come to mind immediately would be the Lakers.
The LeBron to Laker pod.
What?
I said I mentioned that. I had a feeling that that could happen because it just LeBron seemed to really enjoy playing with Korver.
Yeah, and it felt like, especially in this past postseason, I mean, Kyle Korver, we mentioned it a ton on the recap shows. At times, he was the second best player on the Cavaliers.
Yeah, and it wasn't close in some games because they were that bad. Yeah, he was,
you know, the always being there for a dish off from LeBron and just cashing in big-time threes. I know he killed the Pacers in that first-round series. So I think the Lakers would be an option. I mean, obviously the Houston Rockets, they wanted to add some three-point firepower. I knew he would obviously fit in perfect with them. And then aside from that, maybe one of the smaller teams that's just looking for a shooter. I don't know, like if OKC could somehow snag him or somebody like that.
Yeah, it would make a lot of sense in like Memphis if they wanted to like continue to try to add some spacing to that team. But OKC would make a lot of sense as well. And it's not a terribly big contract. So I think there's a lot of options out there. Houston would be fun too. Like giving James Harden and Chris Paul another person to play with that could shoot the three ball. Like he shoots it lights out too. I think Mike D'Antoni would love him.
And the one good thing about Korver is despite being older in age, the good thing is, he really doesn't need a ton of space still to get shots up. And
yeah.
The one thing you notice when you're always watching Korver, he's never standing around. He's always running. He's always moving, trying to get open, which is similar to what J.J. Redick does, which is why I think guys like Korver can have such an extended career is because offensively they just keep moving. I mean, defensively, who knows how worse he can get, going forward because, already last year we saw him get exposed by the Pacers at least. They singled him out a lot on single coverage and switches. But offensively, he can still find a shot.
Yeah, I would think Milwaukee could be a possible location as well. Bud was his coach in Atlanta. He had a really nice season. They could use more spacing. But like you said, the main concern is the defense. And then not only the defense this year, but where is it going to be at next year? 3.5, around 3.5 guaranteed next year. So you could cut him, but you're still taking a hit to the books. Not terrible, but not like you're going to trade a first-round pick or anything for him. It's more going to be a player swap or a second-round pick type of thing.
Yeah.
Anything else on the rumor front that you were aware of that we didn't mention?
No, nothing on the rumor front, but I wanted to ask for your thoughts on the LeBron mural being defaced in LA already.
They don't deserve LeBron. That's what I think about it. That was my initial reaction when I saw that. That's just really, I don't know why you get so upset about it. Not like people have mentioned on Twitter, first off, the dude put in a lot of work making that. That type of artwork doesn't happen in an hour. He was probably spending an entire day or more than one day on there trying to put that together and then just go ruin it for no reason. And I think they put 3 and 6 in the finals on there too. Like, it's just really corny. It's really corny. Yeah. And the fact is that you can't accept, just try to be objective a little bit. Now LeBron is in a Laker uniform. He's better than Kobe. Like, if that's going to really upset you and make you that upset, then you should consider not liking the Lakers and just being a Kobe fan.
Yeah, I remember when I initially, I got a message first that said, somebody was on Twitter, offering $500 to deface it.
Oh, I saw that too. I was like, that was so corny.
And I was like, are you serious? I was like, why? And then, like you said, they put 3 and 6, little fraud. Obviously we hear about the Lakers hate, Laker fans hate, I should say, for LeBron. And I don't know why. I just thought, when you get the soon to be possibly greatest player ever, already top five, in most people's top three, in almost a lot of people's top two. And then just to deface it all because, the King of LA thing, I think rubbed people the wrong way, but it's silly. They definitely don't deserve LeBron. And I hope, if the Lakers get off to a hot start and LeBron's having an MVP type season, I hope these people don't change their mind and start hopping on the bandwagon.
Well, they will. They'll be, especially, LeBron's not going to win a championship this year. The Warriors are still the favorites unless something miraculous were to happen where they're able to make a trade for Kawhi Leonard and then pick up somebody else like a Dame Lillard or something too. I don't see them winning the finals. So that's also going to been a lot of hate too. I see people saying LeBron's not a great Laker until he wins a championship. Guys, there is a difference between winning a championship and then winning a championship when the Warriors are around. I think people are underestimating how good the Warriors are.
And after getting Cousins, what can you really expect this upcoming season?
Yeah, exactly. There is no team on paper ever to be as good as that Warriors team we're about to see. So I just think people need to kind of relax and give LeBron a break with the championship stuff because obviously his numbers are ridiculous on a consistent basis. And in the playoffs, he's a different type of beast.
For sure. So. And, Nick, we just got a Woj bomb.
What did we get?
A mini one. Luka Balamute just signed a 1-year deal with the Clippers.
Wow, a little reunion right there. That's a surprising move. I did not expect that. I knew he had interest from a couple different teams. I actually mentioned the Jack on the last Brooklyn Buzz. I wouldn't mind if the Nets signed him just because, some solid defense and three-point shooting. But Luka Balamute really started to come up in his career in Los Angeles with the Clippers. Nice move for them. Just a solid piece. I don't know if he probably won't start, but he'll come off the bench, give you some D, some three. And the Clippers will be a competitive team. They're not going to be, a dominant team or anything. I wouldn't be surprised if they're hovering around 500.
Yeah. I think it's bad for the Rockets. The Rockets have lost some big pieces this offseason.
Especially defensively.
Yeah.
It's going to be tougher. I mean, they could add Carmelo, but he's not going to bring the defense. I would not be surprised. This has been something that's been mentioned a lot, to see that Ryan Anderson, Kent Bazemore swap. That would make a lot of sense right now because they're really hurting on the wing.
Yeah, they need to do something. I think the Melo move too. I feel they're going to go harder at Melo now after losing Abalamute. These are two moves that definitely, after being so close to the NBA Finals, have put you a lot farther back, despite obviously the Warriors adding DeMarcus Cousins, put them, you know, leaps and bounds ahead. But the Rockets are in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it's definitely – I mean, there's still plenty of time to make moves, but – and there's obviously during the season. But they definitely need to kind of address that right now, because losing those two players – you know, Abamute didn't have a good postseason, but regular season-wise, he was good. And Ariza, we've talked about him a lot already. He's been a guy that's been solid for them for years now. But that wraps it up. Any other bombs before we get out of here? At least we got that before we ended this.
Yeah, no, that one came at a good time. I think we're in the clear for the next 10 minutes.
Until, you know, Kawhi's trade in 15 minutes. But that wraps it up for today. As always, Corey, thanks for hopping on. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. We're everywhere.